read down to verse 9. Then.
Genesis chapter 28 and verse 1. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him, and charged him, and said to him, You shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. And the Almighty God bless you, and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. And may he give you the blessing of Abraham, to you and to your seed with you, in order that you may possess the land of your sojourning, which God gave to Abraham. And Isaac sent away Jacob, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, Jacob and Esau's mother. And Esau saw that Isaac had pleased Jacob, and sent him away to Padan Aram, to take a wife from there, blessing him, and giving him a charge, saying, You shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother, and was gone to Padan Aram. And Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan were evil in the sight of Isaac his father. And Esau went to Ishmael, and took, besides the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife.
Now we are glad we can continue our study. We have been for many years, I say this every time, but it has been many years now that we've followed the story of the patriarchs in this book of Genesis. The book so deep, and as we know, is often called the sequel of the Bible. You find so much that is later unfolded in it. You find it in the New Testament and so on. You find it all already in the shadow and in the life story and so on. There's so much to find. And we spent a long time looking at Abraham, that man that was called by God to come out of his house, his kindred, come out to be one that was there to be separate for God. And he came and he followed God in faith, a man of faith that really shows us that principle of faith that is so vital for each one today. And we are also called out to follow God in faith, to see further than our eyes can see, to follow God, the God of glory that speaks to us. And then we spent time looking at Isaac, who was the son of promise, who was in the land, and he never leaves the land. And we spent time with him over these last years too. And the last study really covered both. We saw Isaac and saw his two sons, Esau and Jacob, and had this sad chapter 27 really, where there's so much failure by really everybody involved. And it is a sad chapter, and yet full of instruction. And we can see that the mistakes that were made in that chapter have consequences now. And we follow the story of Jacob, which is very different to Abraham's story. It's very different to Isaac's story. And yet, it's a story that is shows God dealing with the soul. There are lessons that he learns. And what we will see this time, I trust if we go further in the chapters, and in years to come, if we come together, we will see that there is much for Jacob to learn, and that he learns almost everything the hard way. And that's really something that we can benefit from, I think. But we will see how the mistakes of the last chapter really unfolded, and the betrayal that he betrayed his father, pretended to be Esau, used the name of God in vain. He did it together with his mother. And now, and we've seen here, he has to go away. He cannot stay with his family. He has to leave them. And he's sent away. But we see also the beginning here, this already of a recovery. It's a way that Jacob has to go as a consequence of his mistake, of sin. But it's a way that with all the turns that he takes, is a way that sets him on a course where God corrects him, a course where he has dealings with God, and that's what will come to today too. So I trust that we will benefit from this. There is this practical side that I've emphasized now, There's also, like in the life of Abraham and Isaac, a prophetic side in there, a type to be seen, and I'm sure that would be brought to us as well, so don't be confused when these things come together. It is so rich that we need to really take our time and look at these things in their place. Mm-hmm. But yeah, following Jacob now, and also Isaac, and seems to recover in a certain way here, advising him, keeping him from making another error, mm-hmm. an error that his brother Esau made, taking wives from the Gentiles that's around him.
We know that Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his venison. Rebecca loved Jacob because he was a homely man. We'll see Isaac deceived by Jacob, as suggested by Rebecca. We've read about Isaac's reaction when he discovered the deceit, but as you say, Ben, he seems now to have been in the presence of God about it, and he recognizes, I think, that God overruled his own inclination, and that the lesson rightly was given to Jacob. We know that Rebecca now intervenes again and says that that Jacob should abide with her brother Laban in Haran for some days, she says, in verse 44 of the previous chapter. And then I will send and fetch thee thence. Well, we know that Jacob didn't abide there some days, he abode there 20 years. And we don't know when Rebecca died, but there is certainly no scriptural account either of her sent before him or of him returning and meeting his mother again. It may be that he did, and that scripture is deliberately silent on that matter. But I mean, one of the things that Jacob's life shows us is that whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. That was true, I think, too, in Rebecca's life, with the what were very sad consequences for her and the son that she so much loved.
I think it's interesting that what she says to Jacob about going to her brothers is because of Esau's anger. She's not letting it happen to him. But then she says to Jacob, says to Isaac, I don't want you to marry someone from the locality. She just tells Isaac something different, which is something we get all the way through, where there's always a danger if you have favourites in a family, and the consequences can still last even today. Obviously, she thinks she'll call him within a few days, but you say there's no record of it ever happening in 20 odd years. And I think it's also interesting, we get in the beginning of the chapter, that Esau sees Isaac blessing Jacob after all that's happened and encouraging him to do things, and yet we never hear or see him saying anything to Esau about any of this at all. It just doesn't seem to have acted as he should have. He doesn't say anything about Esau taking local wives or anything, no record of anything said.
I think it's interesting to see that as far as Abraham was concerned, he said to his servant, go and get a wife for Isaac. As far as I know, Isaac never left the land.
No.
When it comes to Jacob, he is told by his mother, basically, to go to that land. And there he gets his wife, or two or four wives. But as far as Jacob's son, Judah, he deliberately went into the daughters of Canaan. And there was a downward slope amongst the children of Abraham. And I'm afraid to say that is basically what is happening in the assemblies today. From the 20 or 50 years ago, when our great-grandfathers were in the assemblies, things have slowly gone down. We have not the same zeal as what they had for the things of the Lord. It should challenge our hearts as to why is it? We have the same God, we have the same scriptures, and yet why are we why is the lack of interest amongst us?
I wonder whether there is a important lesson for us, two lessons for us to learn from this incident particularly. The first is that when we use human reasoning to achieve something, it will inevitably, for the Christian, lead to a sorrowful situation, which was in the case of Isaac. Jacob. Secondly, when we, how can I express this? There are always, and it's been said, consequences for what we do. And I think the children and young people need to learn that when we do something, there are always, it's never different, there are always consequences. And if we choose to go do things our own way, then the consequences will inevitably not be very good, end in sadness and sorrow. But if we choose God's way, the consequences will always be blessing. And I think Isaac and Rebecca is an example of that. Abraham done things, you might say, God's way. But with Jacob, it was on the basis of human reasoning. Let's get out of trouble from my brother. I will obey my mother, but I'll go this way. You know, it's such an important lesson for the Christian here.
Yes.
You find in this that we should take very serious note of it.
We're not to lean to our own understanding. We're to be guided by the presence of God, and we really only arrive at what the will of God for us is as we read His Word and spend time in the presence of God. In all the years that Jacob was away, we don't once read that he had an altar. And it's only when he came back and was back in the land in Shechem that for the first time we read of his altar, and then later at Bethel. So we can see why his own thoughts were dominating his thinking, because he wasn't seeking the mind of God in relation to what his course should be at this time.
Well, it's an element of recovery for Isaac, though.
Yes. Yes.
He was obviously guided by his appetite in the death of before, and we saw the sad family situation and the things that resulted from that, but now we find him reminded of, he obviously had given him the blessing, and now he sees in Jacob the one that has the blessing, and he wants him to receive that blessing.
Yes.
And he says, for that, to do that, don't do what Esau did. Don't go and connect now with the Canaanites and ask you. You're the one to inherit the land. It's for you. And the way to do that is to go to where my bride came from, where your mother was taken from, go to her land and find a wife there. So that's Isaac's side. The other side, of course, is two. I mean, like we have the Abraham and Isaac, we want to see these practical things. It is right for parents to advise their children in this matter, and to bring this to them. And they do this here, and in both those cases, it's even. But there is a difference, and we'll see the contrast when we go on between what happened to Isaac, how his bride was won for him, and how Jacob has to, goes about it, and how he's treated in the way. It's a different situation.
Yeah.
The blessing here is earthly, isn't it? It's the blessing of the land, to have the land. And it does speak here of the land multiplying. I think Drake is 77 years old at this age.
He is.
These practical things always puzzle me, but I don't think we can really make too much of it. I think there are differences here. We've also obviously sent out to marry his cousin, which is not something we would do today. Leslie and Grant, who makes a comment on it, his commentary on that matter. It's not something we would have advised today, but in those days that was perfectly normal, acceptable,
and normal. Yes, he was 77. His age can be computed, but the process of doing so is really quite complicated, and I have no intention of going through it now. But he was 77. So we would say he was no spring chicken. The difficulty of it all, he there on his own head, I'm afraid.
Do we see a problem in these verses that each one of us can get into? Abraham was definitely told he's going to have a son,
yes,
that he's going to be the heir.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he decides, through the advice of his wife, that he can have it with Ishmael.
Yes.
And at the moment in the world, there's so much trouble because of Ishmael.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what happened here in Rebecca was already told when the children were born that the elders would serve the younger.
Yes.
And if she had accepted that, the previous chapter would not necessarily be there. Or the question of going out and getting something to get your dad to bless you.
Yes.
That would have automatically have taken place. And likewise, I would suggest that the 20 years that he spent in Haran would also be passed.
Yes.
And so we have to be careful that we don't put our thoughts on the things of God, except what God says in His Word.
Yes. Yes, it was plainly stated that, God was going to bless him, that that the land would be his. But Jacob spent so much of his life scheming to achieve that end, when God had already told him, this is the end that I will bring you to. And as you say, had he simply believed God, then this difficult path that Jacob trod for a very large part of his life wouldn't have been necessary.
We'll get that with Joseph's two sons even.
No.
So when he brings them for Jacob to bless, he brings them so that the oldest one will be at Jacob's right hand and the oldest hand.
Ephraim was going to be the one that would be more important than Manasseh, and he crossed his hands.
Yes.
Even though at that point, what we really couldn't see. It was just by faith.
Yes.
To get there, he'd have to learn a lot of biblical lessons.
Yes.
And I think also, like a lot of us, he was a slow learner.
Yes.
But the 20 years later, his cousin, his uncle was not able to trust for a start.
Well, he read what he saw and he was a lame,
yeah.
He was just as bad as he was. I didn't scheme. But when he knew he got the blessing, but Rebecca was trying to work it from a human reasoning, and it was all, it caused so much grief. Because then Jacob carried trying to get his blessing. At the end of this chapter, he vows a vow saying, if God will keep me and he'll give me in this way, and give me bread to eat, raiment to put on, if he does it on my terms, then, you know, Jacob still hadn't learned. He was trying to give, sort of dictate to God, bless him, but no. Mm. Well, we have to submit, God decides.
Mm. It's surely Jacob's story is the story to see that principle of reading himself.
Yeah.
Find it. Countless examples where you can look in the details of his life, as you will do, no doubt, point to exactly, you can almost pinpoint sometimes where the reading or where the selling of what reading is taking place. But I just want to also see the other angle that is more encouraging, because that principle we know and we should be conscious of, and it is something that would influence our lives and make us sober in how we live. But the other side is that God does come to his end. Mm. And all the scheming and all the turns cannot change that. Mm. And you've seen that in Abraham's mistake, you've seen it in Isaac's mistake, in Jacob's mistake. God does come to his end. He comes to his end with his own. And that's just something that's true for each one of us, too. We have turns we take, and there are things we reap, and there are sorrows we bring in our lives that we wouldn't necessarily need to have.
Mm.
But there is an end that God brings you to, and it will. That is just that side is there too, and I just want to see that in David's life too. You've just spoke about the end of his life, and there are lessons learned, but there is an end that God has you and brings him down. So I think we'll break for lunch and very soon.
Yeah, God will always bring about his purpose, no matter how fit it is, but we might have to learn a lot of hard lessons.
It's quite encouraging when we come to the New Testament on every occasion in the New Testament where we read that God is the God of Abraham, we also read that he's the God of Isaac and he's the God of Jacob. And I'm not sure where we get the statement, but it's said, isn't it, that he is not ashamed to be called their God. And that's wonderful, isn't it? It's the grace of God that works and brings to his end. And he's not ashamed.